This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. That's more like it. Doku Dazzles, Grealish Grey, Rodri, Ruddy, Rillian and Foden. Well, he's just being Foden. I'm Amos Murphy. Oh no, I've done that wrong again. It's Thursday the 4th of April. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Adam Booker.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
It's here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe.
Welcome back to the City Report Podcast. A midweek episode. We've not done one of these for a while. We've been gifted with the international break and sort of a week or two off. So it's good to be back in the chair reviewing. Well, it's good to be back in the chair reviewing a win. I think you were a little bit more calmer than me earlier in the week. It was nice, wasn't it, Adam, to see City actually play football and score some goals?
Yeah, it was nice. It felt like it felt like old times, felt like the good old days. And speaking of the good old days, I have to say, it's also nice for a podcast, just me and you. Feels like the kids are off at summer camp and mom and dad can have the house to themselves once again.
Easter holidays here in the UK, so maybe that's where they've all gallivanted off. And yeah, house to ourselves. Speaking of which, a bit of sort of house, getting the house in order, really. We wanted to do this as a deeper chat, a full episode, if the schedule will allow it, but it doesn't seem to be the case. Obviously, football's starting back up again. So we'll pick it up in bits and pieces, but it's sort of referring to the season ticket and the ticket prices debacle, and obviously the latest in all of that being the banner gate at the Etihad Stadium. Obviously, was on show at Sunday's game, taken down, City say, and they're adamant that it was because it was covering the advertising hoardings. Few other banners in the stadium at the same time would possibly say that was a bit of a lie, but hey, who are we to question it? And obviously the latest, 1894 group saying their accreditation had been taken off them. City again denying it. Adam, it's turned a bit toxic. Like I say, we'll get into Aston Villa. Great game, but I felt important that we sort of kick it off with this because it was a massive talking point, at least on Twitter before the game.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not surprising. It's super disappointing, but it's not surprising. You know, if you look around the landscape of English football, I don't think there's a single club that's necessarily happy with, at least in the Premier League, that are happy with the direction that they feel their club is going, whether it's ticket prices or ticket schemes or all of that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, City are just an unfortunate symptom of a larger sickness at the moment. But, you know, it's a bit annoying because, and I put this out on Twitter and got a bit of stick from it, but City fans have rolled with a lot of punches in the past, I don't know, decade, because I think there is this sort of debt of gratitude to this, from a footballing point of view, wonderful group of people that have taken over the club and have transformed the fortunes of the club from basically, you know, head to toe, all the way from the ground floor up down to the pitch. So there's been a lot of rolling with punches, and it's kind of gotten all too much with another ticket season ticket price rise and all that stuff. And for the club to not be receptive when I think they've gotten away with a lot in the last few years. And look, I don't think the club has to come out and say, "Oh, you're right, we're going to freeze the season ticket prices." But it's the silencing, it's the not having any sort of dialogue when there are groups of people like the City Matters that are meant to have a dialogue with the club. But like I said, I mean, I may just sound like a battered and bruised old man, but this is just kind of the direction everything is going.
Yeah. Like you said, it was hopefully our intention to properly go into depth with all the details when it was after the fact. But I take that point in time. And I think it's just bits and pieces one after another over the last few weeks that has just led to quite a bit of apathy. I don't know if that's the right word. In the end tonight, yesterday, we're recording it on the night of the game, it turned out to be a decent atmosphere and the fans were up for it. And, you know, that's what football does to it. And I guess that's what the banner said, exploiting loyalty. We might pick it up tomorrow if you've got time, like I said, but we'll get on to football because it was electric, wasn't it? At least on the pitch. A really fluid performance with some notable absentees. Interesting, I think, is the word to describe it. Great, but interesting.
Yeah, and coming into it, when we saw the lineup, and obviously these days we're getting leaks about 6 weeks before the game about lineups from various fantasy Premier League accounts and stuff like that. So
it's like NFL, isn't it? You know the team before. Exactly. 5 days in advance.
Exactly. But, you know, we started to get drip fed these leaks, like no Haaland, no KDB, and Jeremy Doku starting when he's kind of been at the center of a lot of criticism lately. And I'm not sure. I haven't decided yet if I think this was just simple rotation for rotation's sake, or if something from the Arsenal game rubbed Pep the wrong way and he was making a statement by dropping his biggest players. I think it's probably the former, considering the fixture list coming up. And you know, when you look at what lineup we did have in the end, and you've got Jack Grealish and Phil Foden and Bernardo Silva and Julian Alvarez, who has played well in large stretches this season, you think that's enough to beat any team? And this would be a totally different conversation if City don't get a result, but considering they get the result and one of the more emphatic results as of late, then you can't really knock the decision making. And look, it's a great thing that those players didn't have to come on. You know, we got to see Sergio Gomez and Mateus Nunes and Oscar Bob, as opposed to maybe having to rush John Stones on or Erling Haaland on or Kevin De Bruyne on when you desperately need a goal in the last few minutes. So all in all, I don't really have any complaints.
Were you surprised it was both? Because we said on the preview show, obviously, Alex and David yesterday, we said that, you know, this would be a decent time to take one of them out of the team. I think Alex sort of said Haaland's, you know, as good as nailed on because he has been. And I think we all sort of nodded our head and agreed. But at the same time, then it was like, you know, okay, yes, you would kind of take them out of the team, but they have been the undroppables. I don't know if it surprised me that it was both. It was obviously the right decision, but I don't know if there's any shot there.
I think Haaland surprised me because I think he's the kind of player, and this is strikers in general, that I think you play strikers into form. I don't think you play defenders into form. You don't play goalkeepers into form. Yeah. But I think strikers, they're the type of player that, whether it's a penalty or a scruffy back post tap in, anything gets their confidence going, especially a streaky player like Haaland. So he surprised me. His absence surprised me a bit more than De Bruyne's. But considering De Bruyne's age, his injury history, and the fact that his quote unquote replacement in Phil Foden has probably been the best player in the Premier League this season, it's not that shocking to see games
here
and there.
Does he make the decision to take him off even where? I'm throwing questions at you here. It's like a Q&A, but we saw Foden hooked, 65, 70 minutes against Arsenal for a De Bruyne who I think even he would admit was underperforming on the day. Does it not make it a bit weirder than 2 days, 3 days later, it's Foden starting, De Bruyne drops, and, you know, Kevin doesn't even touch the pitch?
Would it be the first time that Pep Guardiola had a weird brain fart?
Possibly. That's that, you know, question answered. So, no more needed. Yeah, like you say, it wouldn't be the first time, but I think trying to understand the genius and the madness at the same time can be a bit difficult. Speaking of genius, Rodri, he's again proven himself. Forget about defensively. We know what he can do, breaking up play. We know what he can do, making tackles, making blocks, etc. City's attacking play, when he's at his best, is just on another level. He is a metronome, isn't he? And I think we've missed that since Gundogan left. That ticking over in midfield, the sort of behind scenes ticking more than anything. Just playing the passes, some of the weight of passes as well, just round the corner to Grealish and Doku, who we'll get to as well, but you maybe want to incorporate into this. Having wingers playing wing positions was another bonus from this game, I thought. But yeah, Rodri in the middle, obviously pops up with a goal. I think he got an assist as well. Genius, best player in the world. I don't know. He's up there.
Yeah, and I think he's on 8 goals now this season, which is his most in any season. And he's certainly taken on... He's certainly taken on a whole other role this season, whether that's feeling as if he has to step up in the absence of Gundogan, who would be that guy to make those runs from midfield and get goals and assists here and there, or if this is just the next evolution of somebody that's probably going to go down as one of the great all-time City players. You know, I think it's helped that players like Mateo Kovacic have been around a bit and have been able to lighten the load in midfield and be a bit more of a shield, but he didn't have that today. And I think we saw that a bit, that when things didn't go well and the ball went the other way, it was a bit, helter skelter at the back. And especially with Rico Lewis stepping into midfield, he certainly is no Kyle Walker. He's not going to be able to get back out wide and deal with counterattacks as quickly as Kyle Walker. Now, obviously Rico Lewis has immense quality that Kyle Walker doesn't. We can get into that later, but on Rodri, yeah, I mean, he's just totally evolved into not only that metronome, but also a playmaker when he needs to be. And City are obviously only going to benefit from that.
Yeah. And I think Noisy Neighbours pod the other week, they did a segment on who were going to be the guys for City, sort of. Gundogan's gone. I guess Mahrez has been in the past, you know, big Champions League, but I think maybe a bit of revisionism on his involvement, especially in the latter run of City's treble last year. You know, he was holding the bench for a good part of it, but he's still a massive miss, and you still know when he's coming off the bench what he's going to deliver. Who are going to be those guys who step up? And I think there were a few eyebrows raised when people suggested Rodri, because like, he's a holding midfielder at the end of the day, and his primary job is going to still be holding that midfield down. But at the same time, we see it in the Champions League final, we've seen it before, Sheffield United away earlier on in this campaign a couple of times as well, probably that I've not mentioned, where he can step up and he can be that difference maker. We'll save him Phil Foden. I know listeners, you're probably thinking, man of the match performance, hat-trick hero, where is his conversation? He should be right up top of the bill, but we'll save that for part two so we can properly delve into it. Before we get there, though, Rico Lewis, he's had I'd say, mixed season so far. Maybe the most diplomatic way of putting it. He did the whole in a similar sort of position in Micah Richards, bursting onto the scene last year. Just catching up with the travel documentary, remembering that Tottenham game where, as Pep famously said, you know, no one's fighting for him, no one's sticking up for him. He's a little kid, you know, you've got to stick up for him. Not that he needs it, having had a childhood spent, you know, kickboxing and whatnot. But he's not really played at the start of this season, or at least in the most part of it yet. That's two games he's played, obviously, back-to-back, one of them through injury, both of them through injury, but starting this one. I'm always amazed by just how comfortable he looks. I don't mean that in a disservice, but he's still a teenager. At the same time, he comes in and he just looks like he's been here forever.
Yeah, I think going back to the fact that he hasn't really been involved much this season, I think a big part of that comes down to he was a part of that sort of triumvirate of midfielders that tried to step in for Rodri when he had his 3-game suspension, and all of those games were absolute disasters. You know, Calvin Phillips didn't recover from that this season. Mateus Nunes barely has played in midfield since then after playing in a double pivot. I mean, we've seen him more out on the wing than in the midfield since then. Kovacic has obviously been the kind of more involved of the three, but Rico Lewis played in that Arsenal. We didn't see much of him since, and we haven't seen much of him stepping in at right back and doing what we all call the John Stones role. But let's give Rico credit is due. It really is the Rico Lewis role that was the baton was handed to John Stones and he crafted it. Yeah, I think in these games where you have a team that's going to sit on the edge of their box and you have to break them down, and obviously Villa were a lot more threatening going forward than Arsenal were, but Rico Lewis feels like almost another Phil Foden in there that he's got the really quick feet. He's got really tight. He's really good in tight spaces. And we saw him link up with all of those players, essentially Alvarez, Doku, Foden, Bernardo Silva on the little pockets on the edge of the box so well. And I think that he could be really useful down the stretch as these games, not only for City, but the teams that they play are going to have higher stakes and bigger things on the line. And there'll be less teams trying to take chances. And I think he'll be really useful for that. So I'm hoping this was a bit of a coming out game for Lewis this season, and we'll see more from him.
He should have scored, though, don't you think?
He should have scored.
Got a shot on target, yeah.
He should have scored.
Possibly the little bit of immaturity there in his sort of decision-making.
If he just pictures the ball like it's his dad holding a big rubber dummy, he'll just wallop it into the net every time.
Yeah, I'm just looking through sort of City's running last year, and maybe I was expecting a little bit more of the games that in the Premier League that mattered, i.e. City's title win was already sort of hanging in the balance. He only started one. It was against Leeds, that sort of shaky performance against Leeds. He played Chelsea, Brighton, Brentford, 90 minutes in both, but all three of those games were obviously when City had already won the title. So yeah, maybe I expect him to have played a little bit more. I don't know.
I
think he can do that.
I think that just comes down to the fact that in that stretch, Pep discovered the playing four center backs and one of them stepping into midfield, and City essentially found defensive solidity, true defensive solidity, for maybe the first time in the Pep Guardiola era. And I think the thinking was, I'm going to ride these four all the way to the finish line. And that's what they did. So,
yes, a couple more talking points before we go to the break. And obviously, like I said, Phil Foden in part two. It didn't really matter in the end. And it was a bit weird because it probably should have had a bit more sort of emphasis on it. But City scored from the resulting free kick. But how on earth Douglas Luiz wasn't shown a second yellow card, I still scratch my head. And look, I don't know, sort of sit here on my high horse and criticise referees, and I understand the absolute difficulty of the job that they've got, but that probably first half was up there with the worst sort of referee showing I've seen from, you know, again, to both teams, just fouls that were not being given, fouls that were being given, and Douglas Luiz commits pretty much identical fouls in the space of 8 minutes, gets a yellow card for one but not the other.
Well, and there was also a third. You probably didn't see it because it was at the far end of the ground from where you sit. But in the build-up immediately to his first yellow card, well, his only yellow card, what should have been his first of two, he also stopped a counterattack that started on the edge of City's box. And I think advantage was played, and that led all the way back down to the other end of the pitch where then he, I believe it was Grealish that he tackled on the edge of the box and led to that free kick. He should have had two. I think Bernardo Silva was arguing the point. He should have had two just on that counterattack alone, and then he could have had a third later. But referees, you know, once they lose control, they can't regain it. It's as simple as that, because then every missed, every groan from the crowd, every perceived missed foul or wrongly given foul, or every time they're surrounded by players, it gets into their little thick skulls. And they don't really recover from it. And I think this was just one of those cases. Once he lost control on the first 10, 15 minutes, that was it.
Yeah, I think we saw that for Aston Villa's goal. Julian Alvarez, for sort of want of a better phrase, fell over the ball, or at least his own feet, and City obviously wanted a foul. And people around me at the stadium saying, oh, you know, that's a foul. Why is he not turning, sort of disallowing the goal, et cetera, et cetera. But like you say, it seeps into it, doesn't it? Had the pattern been set earlier on, that probably isn't the case. In the end, it didn't matter. Although I can't remember who had the shot, and maybe it was John Duran, which is a mouthful. Thankfully, he doesn't play for City. But Douglas Luiz set up a chance at 2-1, and I was thinking, that's it. I think it was Hwang earlier on in the season for Wolves who scored, after he should have been sent off, obviously won the game for Wolves. I was thinking, God, it's going to happen again, isn't it? Thankfully, it didn't. And part of that reason, wonderful segue, Stefan Ortega. two exemplary saves. And look, we know he can do it, but it's still reassuring to see your backup goalkeeper coming in playing like a first choice.
Yeah, I'll never get sick of it, that's for sure. If there's anything I could offer him to stay and sit on the bench for the remainder of his career, I'd be willing to give that to him. I've already stated on here, I think, that I would sell the memory of my wife for Liverpool not winning the league. So, you know, who knows what I would do for Stefan Ortega. Yeah, he's great.
So maybe, as the song goes.
Yeah, exactly. We know this about Stefan Ortega. He maybe is one notch down from Ederson as far as his ability with the ball at his feet, but probably every goalkeeper in world football is at least one notch down from Ederson, and he's maybe a notch up from Ederson when it comes to shot stopping. So where you're losing in one category, you're gaining in another with Ortega. And I think today it was more important to have somebody in there that could make a last ditch save when it's a 3v2 counterattack or a 4v3 counterattack. So I'm not suggesting goalkeeper rotation, but
I was going to ask.
I did say the words. No, I don't think you can predict.
Hombre, Mikel Arteta got stick for saying such a thing. Are you going well, to be
Partly because he lied about it and never played Aaron Ramsdale again.
We don't like a liar, do we? No. I don't know how you'd approach this conversation, but I do think there's a case to be made. Now, God, how am I going to say this? Stefan Ortega didn't win City the treble, but I think having him there certainly inspired Ederson to a level where he was crucial. You know, we saw him in the Champions League final against Inter. The last touch of the game is a world-class, unbelievable save, under that pressure as well. And I do think it's helped. You know, it's going to be a shame if he leaves. Could he be playing more games? I don't know. You're then opening a different kind of worms, aren't you? You're disrupting the number one, and what does that do to Ederson's confidence, et cetera, et cetera.
Stefan Ortega didn't win City the treble, but he didn't not win City the treble.
There you go. Makes you think, people, doesn't it? Next week, Matt Letizia will be on the show speaking to us about pigeons and robots. Speaking of robots, maybe a bit of Haaland chatting part two. Listeners, stay there. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast. What day are we on? Thursday, bank holiday weekends. Do you guys have bank holidays in the States?
No, we go to work in this country.
you have going to work holidays.
Well, I don't, but others do.
Yeah. Bank holiday weekends, they just mess with your head completely because you don't know what day it is. You don't know what time it is as well. Most of my introductions.
We have a couple of holidays for any number of war criminal presidents, and that's about it each year.
Sending that one to the lawyers. Okay, this is why we get more people on the show, because it just turns into sort of borderline illegal activity, which I guess some of the presidents have been guilty of. Hey, there
exactly.
We go, finishing it at that. Speaking of illegal activities, Phil Foden is turning into an absolute filthy watch and an X-rated watch. Some of the stuff he's been doing this season is just completely off the charts. And you know, we'll get into the position talk and Kevin De Bruyne and Haaland and Alvarez and that sort of business possibly a little bit later on towards the end of the show. But just in terms of him himself, second hat-trick of the year, I think that takes him to 21 goals and assists in the Premier League this season, which is level with Saka and Palmer, although obviously Phil Foden doesn't take penalties. In fact, I don't know if he can take penalties, which might be his only criticism. He doesn't strike me as the sort of guy who'd stride up and took one bottom left corner, but just an absolute dazzling performance. And actually, quite quiet in the first half. He gets that goal and suddenly, flick of the switch, he's on it.
Yeah, this seems to be kind of the player that he is these days when he gets one, two or three more, well, one or two more follow that one. So It's fantastic. We always said on this podcast, and it's been said in many city spheres and for going back years now, that when Phil Foden finds his finishing touch, he's going to be essentially unplayable. I think we're starting to get to that point. When he absolutely turns it on, we saw it at Brentford. We've seen it in both Manchester derbies this season and obviously last night against Villa. When he turns it on, he's kind of, you know, our new little Kevin De Bruyne, that he can do things that you just can't defend. And it opens up that old can of worms of when does the baton get passed?
Yeah, which I just want to just delay slightly because a few more sort of wonderful stats about Philip Walter Foden, our Stockport's very own. I have to get that in there. Scored as many hat-tricks, Premier League hat-tricks, as Frank Lampard, Cristiano Ronaldo and Didier Drogba. They each got three. And I guess it's a weird stat.
Sound hat-tricks, like a group you're not really... of frauds.
Yeah, exactly. You're not really going to properly judge a player on how many hat tricks they got. No one's saying Cristiano Ronaldo or Phil Foden's better than Cristiano Ronaldo because he got he's got the same amount of hat tricks.
If Liverpool can judge their amount of points they've tallied in a season by how many goals they scored from outside of the box, yeah, we can judge a player on how many hat tricks they have.
True. Can we do that on how many Premier League charges a team gets?
Oh, we would have smashed the points record. We'd be flying.
Exactly. But yeah, you know, we're in that sort of phase now where we're speaking about records, we're speaking about achievements, we're speaking about player of the year contender. And look, let's move on to it then. Kevin De Bruyne, because he did take his spot. And I know we sort of flirted with this topic in the first part of the show, but just specifically in relation to Foden and Kevin De Bruyne. We spoke about this yesterday, actually, and said, look, you know, does Pep need to sort of say, no, Kevin De Bruyne, you start on the bench more? And we laughed it off. No, that's silly. But it's hard to ignore now, isn't it? The evidence is there.
The evidence is there. And I think if I were to flat out answer, should Phil Foden start over Kevin De Bruyne? I think it should just, first of all, Phil Foden should start every important game. And I think in terms of Kevin De Bruyne's role in those games, we talked about it. Well, Alex and Ollie talked about it after the Arsenal game, that De Bruyne doesn't seem to be suited to these games where teams camp on the edge of the box anymore, which is fine. But he, especially with Haaland in the team, he's somebody that thrives on having that space to either run in or play the balls into. Whereas Phil Foden is arguably the best player in the Premier League, maybe in Europe, in those tight little spaces and making space for yourself. And he uses that low center of gravity, similarly to Rico Lewis, to kind of wriggle out of situations. And, you know, that third goal for the hat trick was exactly the epitome of that, where his tenacity, his ability to get up, win the ball back, turn around, whip it and fire while he's slipping on the wet pitch. And it still picks out a top corner. You know, that was Phil Foden in a nutshell there. I think with Kevin De Bruyne, it can just be a game-by-game basis. If we're taking away egos and contractual obligations and all of that kind of stuff, if you throw all of that out the window, with Kevin De Bruyne, if we're going into a game where you're going to predict it's going to be like that Arsenal game, I'm fine with Phil Foden starting in the center. And if the game gets stretched later on, Kevin De Bruyne comes in off the bench, no problem at all. Real Madrid in a Champions League semifinal, where we know, you know, they'll come out and play a bit more at the Bernabeu and they'll have to leave their half of the pitch. Give me Kevin De Bruyne. 100% give me Kevin De Bruyne. But yeah, I think you take it situation by situation.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask the next question, but you answered it. As in, like, next week we go to Real Madrid away. Obviously, the scene of that wonderful Kevin De Bruyne's best moment in a City shirt. Just quick straw poll. Possibly. I mean, he's got plenty.
I think it's up there, and I think we always think about the Gundogan goal against Villa, but we can't remember how big of a role he played in that. But I think it's certainly his biggest goal. Yes.
Yeah. And obviously it was seen in that wonderful performance. City sort of not at their very best. He pops sort of it. I know you sort of hinted it with them, but you'd start him in that still.
Yeah, I just think that's a game where he'll
have
Foden
go then, because he has to go out to the wing.
Well,
and is that a bad thing? I've seen a few people saying, like, oh, Foden's got a hat trick in midfield, Palace away, he'll be starting at right wing. But like
right now, I think the only way that you can say that Phil Foden plays every game centrally is admitting that Kevin De Bruyne plays absolutely no role in the team. And I don't think we're there yet, and therefore Phil Foden has to go out wide. Or you relinquish some of the control and you play Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden in front of Rodri, and Rodri kind of sits there by himself. And if anybody can handle that, it's probably Rodri, but that's not necessarily something I want to test. So yeah, Phil Foden goes back out to the, it's not that he's bad on the wing. I can't remember the last time. It's maybe that he's just not as involved as we want. But if I've got 75% involved Phil Foden and 100% involved Kevin De Bruyne and playing well, you can't really complain with that.
Yeah, for sure. He's still probably what, top three wingers in the league. Off the top of my head, I can't really think of too many who would go above him. I'm sure this chat will carry on with Foden, so we'll move on, because like I said, there's plenty to speak about. Haaland and Alvarez, I don't feel like that's the same sort of conversation we're having. Correct me if I'm wrong. It felt more like Haaland was just in a bit of a rut. He's played a lot of football. There's a lot of big games coming up. Probably best to keep him out of the team. Correct?
Yes. And even when he is quote unquote cold, I think you play him into form.
Sweet. Doku, Grealish. Again, we're going for the entire team. We could have sort of done 11 versus 11. But yeah, I thought they were fantastic. And again, wingers playing wingers.
Yeah, and I want to... This is check my pulse. Put a little sign in the back of the car window of the kidnappers that are driving me away. This is really me saying this. I want to talk about Doku, not Grealish. He was fantastic.
He was.
I think including... four assist game, I think it was, against Bournemouth, including that
game.
This was his best game in a City shirt, by far.
Absolutely.
I think maybe we've discovered something with him out on the right, but the fact that he can just go straight to the byline, because he's going to beat most defenders, he can go straight to the byline. He doesn't have to cut back in and pick out some sort of pinpoint pass. He can just whiz it across the box. Fine. That right there makes him extremely dangerous. And he did more as well. My complaint with Doku is, if you're not going to create goals and assists, do other things. And he didn't do other things. Jack Grealish doesn't run up his goals and assist tally, but he does a shit ton of other things that make him so valuable. I remember one particular occasion, Doku tracked back and went shoulder to shoulder with, maybe it was Luca Dean or John Duran, I can't remember. Cleaned him right out, won it back, got the attack going again. And that's the kind of things that I've wanted to see from Jeremy Doku. So check my pulse. It's really me. I bloody loved Jeremy Doku this evening.
I echo that. It felt like it wasn't a different play, because we've seen that sort of stuff, but it just felt like a different iteration. And I wonder why. And look, I know we speak about Pep Guardiola's genius, but sometimes it is just as simple as playing him out on the left because he can cut in on his right foot. But that seems too FIFA-y. Sort of EAFC now. It seems too simple. Why was he not out on the right from September? Because it just looks totally more natural. And again, obviously at the opposite side, you get Jack Grealish, who does far more than you see with the sort of the goals and assists. But it's not Grealish or Doku. It's Grealish and Doku now. At least going forward.
Yeah, and why he wasn't out on the right earlier on, I think simply because Jack Grealish was injured and or out of form most of the season, and your only other option out on the left, if we consider that Phil Foden playing on the right is still in the interest of getting him inside on his left, then you have no other option out there but Oscar Bob, who is obviously a great player in his own right, but doesn't have the trust to be playing 90 minutes for, you know, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. So now that Grealish is back, I mean, if Doku plays like that every week, which he's still young, it's still his first season, I don't expect that to happen. But if that's the kind of player that he can consistently become, then you've found yourself that perfect kind of thunder and lightning type winger combination.
Yeah. And what are we now? Over half an hour and we've not spoke about the best player on the pitch all night. Sergio Gomez.
Ooh. Did he almost score at the end? Am I right in thinking
he had a post?
I would have lost my mind. I love that little guy. I think he's such a class footballer.
Yeah.
And I love watching him when he goes plays for the Spain under 23s. He's so good. but he's just, we're not going to see it in this shirt.
I say this as a general introvert. He's the shyest person I've ever met in my entire life. Honest to God, the fella, weirdly enough.
Does he speak English well? Or is it like forced shyness because he can't speak English?
No, I don't know. And I think we've seen the city.
Because sometimes when I talk to Luke Bardsley, I feel really shy because I don't catch a word that he's saying. But that's just gossip.
That's what his mum and dad say too. Sergio Gomez was in the Man City store buying shirts with his brother, and sort of went up to him and said hi. It was the day after the Club World Cup final, said, you know, congratulations, etc. And he just like, I love that side of it, because you see footballers, the flashy, they're sort of, you know, a little bit obnoxious at times, maybe not as humble. He was just like an average guy. He was like, oh God, you know, why are you coming up to me? Like any normal person would. I just wish he'd played more, and maybe this quality isn't there, but I think he's a decent enough option to have. Adam, Premier League title race, obviously we've seen Arsenal win. They picked up 3 points. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Liverpool probably beat Sheffield United. I know, crazy, check my pulse. But we're probably looking at the sort of status quo in terms of points tally, maybe a swing in goal difference by one or two goals, but it's probably going to be as you were with 8 games left. Difference being City have got over that hurdle, and I think I saw someone say that with a win against Palace, they could go top of the table before the games at the weekend. Liverpool play Man United, Arsenal play Brighton. Perspective, it can quickly change, can't it?
Yeah, it absolutely can, especially when City are going up against two teams that they've beaten to the title on numerous occasions. So City absolutely still have the psychological advantage in the title race. They may not have the advantage on paper. They may not have the advantage in the standings. They may not have the advantage in the upcoming fixture list. But the psychological advantage of, if Liverpool drop a little bit of blood in the water, if Arsenal drop a little bit of blood in the water, they know that City are waiting there to pounce. And once City pounce, it's game over. So where things are right now, it takes one good weekend. It takes one good weekend or one good Wednesday night, and the whole thing flips on its head. So I know that we are all different, especially we on this podcast. Some of us are really different. But the City players, especially now that we've seen the kind of mentality inside the dressing room from the Netflix documentary in the last few days, if they smell blood in the water, it's over. So maybe I'm feeling a little weirdly confident here. I've now been confident about a Premier League title race. I have praised Jeremy Doku over Jack Grealish. I might go eat kimchi or something and really test my limits here today. Because I fucking hate kimchi.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows? Where's shit going on? Yeah, and to go back to what I said before, I've just had a look at the table. Liverpool beat Sheffield United. City could go top, but it would require a little bit of a goal swing. So don't get too excited yet, guys. You know, there's still plenty of time to go. But as we've seen, weird stuff happens this time of year. I think we'll call it a day. It feels like we've blown through that. So many talking points, but it's been one of them games. We'll be back tomorrow. Maybe do a little coffee corner with a few listener questions. So if you've got any, send them in. But Adam, plenty of fun.
It was. Thank you very much, Amos. Or Mom, should I call you?
Yeah, no. Go and put the bins out. Okay, listeners, that'll do. Before we get into some very weird role-playing going on there, we'll catch you later. One more episode for the week. Enjoy your Thursday. We'll see you on Friday. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end-of-season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.